end of the year.
Alhamdulillah. We have the pleasure of seeing it go out on a zikr night, which is wonderful. Only can only happen every 7 years. And, who knows where anybody will be 7 years from now. This also marks the third year of our meetings, which began began in January 3 years ago. So we acknowledge that. I thought it would be interesting to review this year by going over the themes that we've worked with this year. I have them written down here, so maybe a little bit more light, Natasha. Pass those around, and those around. At the bottom of the page it says threshold themes of 2015. So we work with themes every month just to give ourselves a focus that this, the teachings of Sufism are so broad, so comprehensive, that it helps to have a sort of like a little keyhole to look through. Of course, through that keyhole, you can see a universe, just as through this thing called the eye, which is very small, you can see a galaxy. And through the eye of the heart, you can also see infinity. So these things, though small, are huge. So, Anna, would you read the January theme to us?
Awakened being is attention guided by the heart in everyday life.
I've already decided that we'll use the same theme this January. We're going to repeat it. I think one of the important things that can be done in these times we live in is to find another language, an appropriate and possibly a new language for expressing certain truths. And I think this is an example of that. You know, we are our attention. Whatever we give our attention to, that's what we are in that moment. You know, if we're grumpy, you know, if we're thinking of complaining about something or grateful for something, that's what we are at that moment. And if we could also clear the mind, the thoughts, and just open up the space of being, that also becomes a portal through which our attention, which is our very soul, can enter into a kind of infinity, or at least a different experience than our typical hour-by-hour mundane experience of life. So, what this brings together, it conjoins attention and the heart. How often does our heart guide our attention? How often does some attraction, some comparison, this is better than that, or no, this is worse than that, you know, or some disturbance, or something that's merely loud, or attention grabbing, just takes our whole soul out of us. So what if we could be the kind of people who could allow our attention to be guided by our heart more, more and more. To remember, for instance, what our priorities are, what's important, what's of value in every moment, so that our attention isn't just flying off in all kinds of directions, because there's so many weapons of mass distraction in this life. They are weapons. Adelita, would you read February?
Character is a spirituality infused balance of love and intelligence.
Read it again. You missed one word.
Character is a spirituality infused...
Nope, stop right there.
Spiritually infused balance of love and intelligence.
Okay, so you have to read with intelligence too. Of course it makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense the way you read it. Maybe it makes more sense the way you read it. I don't know. But character. Again, we're combining different elements, you know, to get like between different poles of meaning, to get a little flash of understanding. Character is the spiritually infused balance of love and intelligence. Again, in Sufism, they say love is intelligence, really. I mean, you can't have true intelligence without love. And you also can't have a pure love without intelligence. Otherwise, we wouldn't really know what to love and what's worthy of our love. We love, you know, whatever seems to perhaps coddle us or make us feel special. There could be danger in that. Character is a spiritually infused balance of love and intelligence. Lizzie, March.
This is the work of the heart, not the work of the head.
Again, it's the heart. As important as the head is, as important as our intellect is, and a clear understanding of metaphysics, of our place in the universe, of what the how the human being is structured, all that's important. But if we spend too much of our time in our heads, we're missing something big. I once advised, actually, very presumptuously, but I once advised a fellow sheikh that I know, we were talking about spiritual practice, and I suggested that he spend, what place, what is it, is it my place to say this, but I said it anyway, that it would be good to spend, for every hour you spend reading about Sufism, spend an hour practicing. Munib, April.
The natural state of human being is worship. The human needs God as the garden needs spring.
Yeah. An odd proposition in today's consumer society. We, in this society, we even consume spirituality. Meditation becomes, you know, a practice for relaxation or for more efficient functioning. In our, you know, contemporary consumer spirituality, yeah, welcome, welcome. You know, take what we want of it, when we want it. Where's your attention right now? You see how quickly we can illustrate these points. It doesn't take much time. The natural state of the human being is worship. Well, we could say the most natural state. Maybe it's not the absolutely natural state, but imagine if it could be our natural state. If we could live with that awareness of the divine more and more. Why? The human needs God as the garden needs spring. Fareed, would you read May?
May. Leave opinions and blame. Be an objective witness and serve in love.
A bit of psychological advice, a bit of house cleaning. And a proposal for a very high state. Be an objective witness. Remember working with this scene? Anybody remember working? I remember this one. I think it's one of the more memorable ones.
Yeah.
I don't know what was going on that month, but that this was, it seems that was a long month, as I recall. Sarah, would you read June?
Patience is consent to the present moment. Patience is crowned with faith.
Patience is consent to the present moment, as opposed to wanting to be elsewhere, somewhere else at some other time. And patience is crowned with faith. Now that's an interesting one, actually. That for sure is in Mevlana. Is it also a hadith? I'm not sure. I think it may be. But it's an interesting idea, an image. If our patience were sufficient, its crown would be faith. Crown is somehow completes something, honors something, represents a very exalted state of something. And so there's a relationship between faith and patience. Belief doesn't really enter this equation. What we mean by faith is something, it's about a state in the present moment. A state of consent, a state of acceptance of time, a particular relationship to time, and the crowning consummation of patience is faith. And faith is not something small or cheap. Natasha, would you read the next one?
Be cleansed of shallow idolatries. Affirm your young, Yahak.
You're in Ramadan during that theme, as well as in the previous one. Well, we all have idolatries to look at and recognize as such, right? If the natural state of the human being is worship, let's get the worship part of it right. Otherwise, we'll be worshiping false gods, the illusory idols of our imagination. Christian, August.
The more the mind and the heart become still, the more we can trust in God.
Proposition to be verified. Who knows? Maybe it's not true. Should try. Maybe it's worth finding out. If you're ever in that state, and the mind and heart are still, see if trust is there. And when trust is not there, see what the mind and the heart is like at that moment. How can the mind and heart become still? It's a matter of a certain kind of exercise or practice. Merle, September.
The false self, nafs, will never be satisfied. So strive with God to be near to Him.
Now, if anybody can prove this wrong, let me know. Has anybody's nafs here been totally satisfied? No? Okay, let me know if that ever occurs, because we don't want to spread untruths here. So strive with God to be near Him. There's a lot in that. Remember, notice the with. Strive with. It's actually Quranic. I didn't make that up. If you're going to strive with the divine. It's good to have that with you. If you're going to strive. It's a contradiction. It makes no sense. It's totally illogical. But it's also practical. Strive with God to be near to Him. Well, I suppose if, let's say, you took a journey with a friend, like somebody you didn't know very well, and as you became near to that person on your journey, as you strove or journeyed with that person, you might find nearness in that relationship. Nicole. October.
Begin with contentment, Buddha, then follow the heart.
That's a tall order, isn't it? One of our teachers, who would be 100 years old this month, if you were alive, said for him contentment, or kanat in Arabic and other languages, it was a very important concept, and the concept means knowing, he defined it in this sort of somewhat awkward English as knowing that you have. Kanat is knowing that you have. It doesn't mean you're self-satisfied or complacent, but you know what you have. And you give your consent to that. You're grateful for that. You consent to it, and therefore you can be contented with things as they are in this moment. It doesn't mean there isn't more beauty, more love, more truth that one could move toward. But you begin, rather than being motivated by something negative or by some negativity. Begin with contentment, but then follow the heart. Maybe we can pay attention to the heart more truly when we begin from that point. Kasim, November.
The disciplines of dervishhood are a way to discovering your true identity beyond the false self.
Sometimes we need to state things, you know, in a fresh way to understand what it is we're doing. Lots of things that could be said, lots of ways to frame it. This is just one more way to frame it. And it proposes certain things. One, that there are these disciplines. In fact, that's the theme of the gathering we'll do in San Francisco in a month or so. The joyous disciplines of dervishhood. So that you don't think it's just grueling, you know, clench your jaws and discipline yourself. No. The joys of discipline, as opposed to the dissipation of the lack of discipline or frustration of not having a discipline. Once again, one of our teachers, the one who would be 100 years old this month, defined discipline simply as methodical pursuit. Methodical pursuit. Which means a quality of intention, a bit of knowledge, and awareness. As opposed to random flailing about in our efforts to whatever, be spiritual or be whatever. More likely that flailing about is a little bit of spirituality, a little bit of something else, a little bit of something else. Not a coherent humanness. Camille, would you read December?
The beauty of the human being is as much and as great as their love.
I hope that's self-evident. Now, how is it to hear these again? To look at this year that we've been through. I think we might just stay with the same themes this year. You think that might be worthwhile? We could maybe come around again another time? Maybe we're just beginning to understand some of these things? Maybe? By now, all of these could be part of our repertoire, you know, part of our consciousness, part of how we approach the world and each other. And now, just as a kind of a mirror to this, Rove, could you read the Quranic selection? But I want you to read it as if you're reading it to an invisible being who's in that other room. They want to hear it.
O you who have faith, be mindful of God with all the mindfulness that is due to you, and do not allow death to overtake you before you have surrendered yourselves to Him. And hold fast altogether to the rope of God, and do not draw apart from one another. And remember with gratitude the blessings which God has bestowed on you. how, when you were adversaries, he brought your hearts together so that through his blessings you became as though of one family, and how, when you were on the brink of a fiery abyss, he saved you from it. In this way, God makes clear his signs to you so that you might be guided, and that there might grow out of you a community that invites to all that is good and encourages the doing of what is right and prevents the doing of what is wrong. And it is they who shall attain happiness.
Yeah, so happiness is part of it too. Happiness is okay. You don't have to reject happiness on this path. In fact, this is the path of happiness. It's the easy way. All the other ways are hard. You know, Mevlana says, anyone who followed the path of spiritual poverty, which means emptying yourself, not letting your ego be attached to this and that, not complaining, you know, anyone who followed the path of spiritual poverty was never unsatisfied. And no one who followed any other path was ever completely satisfied. That's how he puts it. So, this beautiful, isn't it? It's a beautiful selection. And, you know, such a community, may there be such communities in this world. And the bigger, the better, the more inclusive, I mean, the better. It's not meant only and necessarily for some tiny group. This wasn't referring to a small circle of people at that time. It was a transformation in a society that was quite real and tangible. So tonight is a kind of a retrospective. It's reminding us of what this path is about. What are some of its elements? And on the other side is a condensation of a paper. Sometime we'll share the whole paper, but it's called Sufism as Applied Spirituality. This is normally about four times as long as what I'm going to share here, and even that four times as long piece is also very condensed. But Anna, would you read this to us? Let me just interrupt for a moment and say these are principles. Every sentence is a principle. It could be a paragraph, it could be a chapter. Let's see how it relates to the themes we've been hearing tonight and the Quranic selection we just heard. Okay, thank you.
Sufism is the application of spiritual principles to achieve full spiritual development for oneself in synergy with one's community. We are beings of two dimensions. To try to understand the human being purely in reference to itself is like trying to understand a seed without reference to the fertile environment that would allow the seed to sprout, grow, and mature. Our nature is like a seed, which can only sprout in the fertile soil of human relationships. Among the most powerful principles of applied spirituality is cooperating with the transformative power of love, and thus solving one's problems with love. Transformation, in this case, means transforming from a lower, coarser vibration to a higher, subtler vibration. In order to live in the vibration of love, we shine the light of our will through the spectrum of love's qualities. Patience, kindness, generosity, humbleness, guilelessness, good temper, courtesy, altruism, sincerity, endurance, forgiveness, and courage. A community can be defined as a group of people with a common interest, resulting in a shared resonance. The value of such a community is that it provides a high enough platform from which the state of each individual can be raised to an even higher level. And as for those who embrace faith and who forsake the domain of the negative and strive hard together with you, these are of you. And they who are closely related have the highest claim on one another according to God's decree. Attempting this journey of transformation alone within today's society, based as it is in individualism, consumerism, and materialism, is a nearly impossible task. But within a community dedicated to this transformation and informed by an adequate knowledge of transformation, if an individual practices the disciplines of spirituality, this transformation will be natural, spontaneous, and inevitable. This is a call for you to be among a community of people who awaken the resonance of love and also awaken the spectrum of qualities. Likewise, if any of these qualities are individually awakened, whether through reason, social encouragement, or even imitation, the original power of love from which these qualities emerge will also be invoked.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's the end. So let's just have a little discussion about this. There are some subtle ideas in here. You might not even notice them. But what interests you? What befuddles you? What would you like to comment on? What would you like to understand better? Yes.
So, the last two lines of this ayah, and they who are closely related have the highest claim on one another, according to God's decree. Can you elaborate a little bit?
That's a good question. Let me speak about the Quran first and say that our path, our practice, our spirituality is in a major part an interpretive relationship to a text like that. The text is there. And it's for you to establish your relationship to it. It's good that you ask. I may not have an adequate answer, other than to say, I have experienced it. I've experienced the immediate brotherhood and sisterhood that comes out
of that recognition, of the recognition of that connection. I've experienced it even when I felt I didn't deserve it. I can go many places in the world, in many different cultures, and skin colors, and cetera, et cetera, and languages. And there's an immediate recognition of a bond among those who recognize this truth and know this truth. It's quite powerful. So maybe, rather than a should, it is a statement of fact. But I'd like to know if anybody else has some understanding of this, those who might be familiar with this ayat and have your own sense of what it means or what it means to you.
I've heard it interpreted before by somebody as pointing to the fact that this spiritual brotherhood and spiritual bonds have the capacity to become much stronger than biological bonds. Biological brotherhood, as you say, or biological bond. It has the capacity to do that. And these bonds, once established, are much stronger and difficult to break compared to physical, biological ones.
Yeah. Yes, I've heard it said by a certain Sufi sheikh who once said to us, he said, you know, they call, in some orders, they would call the community an ikhwan, which means brotherhood, sister. And this one particular sheikh, who was important to us in our early years, he said, these people in our ikhwan, they're closer to me than my own children. In certain important ways. And those ways include the fact that one might have a language that allows a certain communication on a level that is rare, and an agreement and a mutual understanding of what certain values might be. So thank you, Kasim. It's very apropos. And by the way, let me add to that. This path would not be of much use if it didn't increase our capacities to also love our families. As one mother once said to me, you know, she said, every time I leave my children to come to a retreat, one time she was leaving her children, she said, and one of the children said, Mommy, Mommy, don't you love me? And her answer was, yes, and when I come back, I'll love you even more. And that was her experience. So it's not an either-or situation. And you know, one of the most fundamental criteria of a real spiritual path is that it increases our capacity for love. If we don't see that growing, you know, if you're on a spiritual path and you don't see that growing, then either something's wrong with you or the path. So figure it out.
For me, this is such a beautiful reflection and elaboration on other metaphors, and I mean, especially I think it brings together this idea, you know, I think we have in our culture, especially, of self-fulfillment, self-realization, like being the best you can be, you know, and that it's such an individual an individualistic pursuit often, I think, spirituality. It's like, I'm going to attain enlightenment. I'm going to perfect myself. And I feel, you know, I think what this illustrates so beautifully in Sufism is that there, you can't take that individual out of the context, out of the container, and that it's the perfect illustration is the chickpea being cooked. You know, you can't, when the dish is cooked, you can't take the individual chickpea out and say, that's the really delicious one. You know, it only makes sense. The whole thing only makes sense in the context. And that's what we're, and it's such a beautiful realization that you also, in cooking, you're contributing to something much bigger than yourself too, which I think is actually what everyone wants. They want to be part of something bigger, but it's usually perceived as me, as this identification. But here I see it's melting. All mm-hmm. that is melting. Mm-hmm. And you're just becoming inseparable from this beautiful vibration, and it's, yeah, you can't, you know, you can't take one part out of the other.
Mm-hmm. Well said. So as it says, that individual spiritual development in synergy with one's community and with the wider field of spirit, with the divine.
So this ayatollah takes you, at the very end, takes you beyond community. Starts off with you, goes with strive with you, and then part of you. So you're expanding by crossing the same. You're expanding your family. So the last two verse, you know, in the last verse, they have the highest claim on you. To me, experiencing being part of a community, and that being a part of the community, it's, at least from my perception and from my experience, it just expands your family. You can call it a community. Yeah, when you enter into practice or enter into it, but it ends up turning being the enlargement of your family. And enough, of course, it's through love, naturally. So it's beautiful the way it's done. It starts off as, okay, you're starting as a community, those who strive with you, okay, it's together yet separate, but in the end, when you have the highest claim, it goes beyond just the meaning of community.
You talk about the bonds, whether they be biological or cultural or the different kinds we have, and even that word bonds, whereas here we're using words like resonance and vibration, which is what brings us together, and it's on a different level. Because those other bonds are not always so harmonious. It may be strong, of course, because but they're not necessarily on that level of resonance together.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, it's a very important observation. Traditional cultures, in traditional cultures, families and human beings have all kinds of claims on each other. And sometimes there are claims of honor, which we know can go awry, etc., etc. This is something else. This is a community. The definition of community is a group of people who develop a common, and I'll use the word resonance, but I could also use the word vibration, which doesn't mean sameness. It doesn't mean sameness of thought. It doesn't even mean agreement in every aspect, but in some way a common vibration that allows communication, cooperation, trust, and much more.
So in the weeks when Camille and I are going to be away, because starting, we will meet next Thursday, and then Friday we leave, we'll be gone for about 6 weeks. And I regret in one way that I have to be away so long, but it just turned out that way. And but you were still here. And Christian was saying, you know, he was reminding me, he said, remember last year you went away and there was no heat in the house and we all gathered upstairs, you know, wrapped in blankets, and we read Rumi to each other. It was wonderful.
So please come gather.
So we will figure that out. Maybe next week we'll talk a little bit about that. But in the meantime, give some thought to that. And because, you know, what is actualized here so far in this community is just a portion of what the Sufi tradition is and could be, what this community is and or could be. But it's not going to be accomplished through some sort of authoritarian procedure, I promise you. For lots of reasons. For one thing, it's better that the initiative come from all of us. And so I'm leaving it up to you to find ways to do that. And it has been happening in beautiful ways. It may happen more. You need to be aware of the possibilities and the responsibilities of that. And make the best of what we have, because it is something rare. In every moment, there is a continual, what we call, work on being, the work of presence, the work of divine remembrance. And we're together and we come on a Thursday night and we cross that threshold, we enter into a different space than we're in most of the time. And yet even in this space, we slip in and out of real remembrance and real presence, because our capacities are what they are. But we're learning. We're learning to awaken something that can be spontaneous, natural, and at the same time also includes a kind of inner mastery over those unconscious parts of ourselves, which, when you begin to observe, you'll know what I'm talking about, if you haven't already. Mm-hmm. The ways that we slip into our automatic personality, you know, and forget real relationship. Lots of teachings about this. The beauty of a community of lovers of God, seekers of truth, who are also humble human beings, should be a joy and a treasure. There's a reason why you know, we're not several hundred people here right now. Not because we're excluding anybody. But it is as it is.
So also, if you haven't received it yet, a new newsletter was sent out from England at midnight in England, and we're moving to a monthly newsletter. It used to be more or less quarterly or whenever I got around to it, and now we're combining the UK newsletter with the international newsletter into something more regular and predictable. And Saima, especially, who you all have met, I think, sends her salams, and she's one of the key people, and Sadat also has. We have completed just today, really, the final manifestation of a new website that's designed to be mobile-friendly and also includes a redesign of... It doesn't look all that different. It's not radically different in its appearance, but it's radically different in its organization. And a number of people have worked very hard for months on this, and there were some final glitches at the end that had to do with deep security issues related to the service provider, etc., which we didn't expect to have to deal with. But now it seems to be working. And along with it, the HeartSpace app is available, and all the sound files from that are downloadable. There was a period of a couple of days when that wasn't working because of these security issues. But we can breathe out now.
Inshallah, I'm back in again.
And the newsletter went out this evening, and if you haven't signed yourself up for the e-newsletter on Sufism.org, that's why you're not getting the newsletter. You have to go there, type in your email address and your first name at least. Alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillah, we're all here together. Those who are here are here, but I'm glad that we realize the importance of being together on this night, this last night of the year, because these cycles mean something. They're an opportunity to awaken a new intention, which is important for our spiritual practice. There's an energy available tonight and tomorrow that you should take advantage of. May your intentions be beautiful and truthful. May you remember them and have the will to sustain them. One very important part of this page on applied spirituality was the concept of shining the light of our will through these particular attributes. Would you read those attributes again? And by the way, these are a little bit like the gifts of the Spirit that you would read about in St. Paul.
Patience, kindness, generosity, humbleness, guilelessness, good temper, courtesy, altruism, sincerity, endurance, forgiveness, courage.
Thank you. And so there's an important idea in this, to shine the light of our will, which means to enact these qualities intentionally, even if you are imitating, you know, even if you're faking it. Fake kindness, fake guilelessness. I mean, don't fool yourself, but try. In other words, just do it. And the principle here, which is a cosmic principle, these are the fruits of love, 12 fruits of love. Produce the fruit and the tree will arrive. You could try and summon the tree and the fruit will come from that. But it's actually easier in some ways, or more practical, or more realistic, to enact some of these qualities and therefore, in other words, produce the effects and you summon the cause. This is a reverse causality that is profoundly true in a cosmic sense.
When I this first, I also immediately thought of the verse from Surah Maryam, those who do good works, God will endow with love.
Yes.
So it's,
that's
it's
exactly it. Thank you. And that's such an important, it's one of the most important verses on love in the Quran.
Yeah.
In fact, where is our verse in that? Remember?
Yes.
In your study?
No. Packed away.
Gotta find that. We have a beautiful calligraphy. So it says in Arabic, those who keep the faith and do the work of reconciliation and holiness, salahati, the Rahman will endow with hub, with love. So you do this work of healing, reconciliation, all these things. This is just making it more explicit. With that, thank you for remembering that. It's such an important verse. Yeah, that's how it works. Otherwise, people talk about love, a lot. There needs to be a practice. There needs to be almost a science and knowledge of this thing called ashq. There can be a disciplined pursuit of this. There was a great teacher from the Caucasus who said, he came to the West and he said, people, you don't know much about love, and you talk about it a lot, but really you don't really know how to do it very much. So what I'm going to ask, and he asked some of his students, who are these aristocrats and, uppity French and Russian people, and he said, I want you to take a plant and I want you to learn to love that plant. And once you think you can love that plant, then you move to something else. Maybe one day you'll be able to love a human being. So there is practice. And one of our teachers said, Jesus wouldn't have asked us to love if it weren't possible.